Before we get into today's podcast, I want to offer you a powerful free resource. We often hear from listeners looking for answers to those who claim God cannot exist for a variety of scientific reasons. But science actually supports the existence of God, which is why I want to offer you a free download called God's Not Dead. It explores scientifically how our own cosmos points to a creator in three clear areas. Again, this powerful resource is yours absolutely free, so why not download God's Not Dead for free right now at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
Understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show. I am delighted to be joined today by Dr. James Emery White, who is the founding and senior pastor of Mecklenburg Community Church, or MEC, in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's a former professor of theology and culture at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, where he also served as their fourth president. Dr. White has authored more than 20 books, including Hybrid Church, The Rise of the Nuns, and my personal favorite, Meet Generation Z. Jim, online church is a huge priority for MEC. Would you share just a bit of your journey? Because you were online before COVID, weren't you? Without even knowing, obviously, that that was going to happen. Would you just share a bit of your journey?
Yeah, let me see if I can make this succinct. We were a multi-site church, five locations, as up till June of 2019, when we closed all of our sites but one. Consolidated it all back onto one campus. We have a very large plant, so we were able to do that. We have 80 acres that we're on. And so we knew we could, you know, build as we needed. And so, but we did all that because we were finding that these sites were extremely expensive, and we just wanted to be so careful with God's money. And what also was happening was, it was so clear to me, and it had been for several years, that this digital revolution had taken place, and that the barriers to things were not geographic anymore. They were digital. And I just we'd look at what we were doing with all these sites, these physical campuses, and what it meant to keep those going versus, you know, what it would be like if we could really pour it into digital outreach and more in that area. And it was just, it's so clear to me that that was really the future of what we needed to do. So we made the decision in 2019 to close all those other sites, put all of those resources and efforts into our digital footprint, and become a fully hybrid church, meaning both physical and digital, with two campuses, one physical, one online, and to fully staff that online campus like you would any other campus, and to put all those efforts in digital marketing and digital outreach and YouTube videos and everything we could think of. And so that was a massive shift. And then when COVID hit, we just looked a lot smarter than we were. But we had made that shift before. And the church never grew faster. We never reached more people. And being online with a full online campus, we're not talking just a Facebook stream. We're not talking about just a live feed of what's happening on the weekends. We're talking about an actual campus fully staffed, and the service is completely curated and developed for online consumption. From everything about it. And we have just reached so many people that will just say in the chat room, I would never be caught dead in a church. I can't believe I would never do that. And I can hardly believe I'm even here, but this is a place where I can explore. And so now we probably have on any given weekend, at between 10 and 12,000 attending online. I mean, we're talking separate IP addresses. We're talking, you know, so it can be larger than that because we have, you know, families watching together and people, you know, gathering in groups and such, and Starbucks and stuff. But we have, we have at least that many, and 70% of them are from Charlotte. I mean, it really mm-hmm. is reaching who we want to reach.
And you've talked about this a lot in Hybrid Church in the book, which sort of shares some of that story. But is the dominant way that those people are coming still through invitation from a friend?
Yes, but a digital invite has now grown dramatically. Mm-hmm. And there are some seasons now where the number one reason that they came to the church was because of a digital invitation. Mm-hmm. And now when we can combine a digital invitation with a personal invitation, then the power and the potency is amazing. But we're in an increasingly isolated world. We're in an increasingly lonely world. Relationships are fewer and far between. Neighborhoods are less close. People don't talk. We're working remotely. And so the digital invites, the digital marketing, if you will, the outreach has become huge, and finding ways to make that as personal and direct, as authentic and trust-based as possible, is what we're about. So we work very hard at that, and we are finding that now our digital outreach is arguably at least up there right with personal invitation mm-hmm. for all those reasons.
And this is a huge question, and you've covered it in Hybrid Church, but how has online and social media impacted the way that the world engages with Christianity?
Well, I mean, that's where they're going to explore you. You're not going to find the typical unchurched person, and we could also probably assume that they're not a Christian, but let's just say unchurched. They're not just going to say, gosh, I think I'll just go to church today and explore things. You know, that's a huge step. They're not going to do that. They're at best going to try to explore something anonymously online. They're going to do it like they do everything else in life. They're going to start with Google, and they're going to put in certain search words, and they're going to see what they can find, and they're going to start trying to, you know, it's kind of like our whole world self-medicates through Google. We solve our problems, we get answers to our questions, we come to conclusions, we do it all that way, which is a little scary, but we do. And because it's scary, because, you know, again, it's without wisdom, often without discernment, and it's highly a lot of these sites and things look extremely good and sound very authoritative, but it's you know, you've just been fed one more conspiracy theory. But so they're going to start online, so you better start online. They're only going to be willing to meet you online, so meet them online, and in the way that they want. Give them the anonymity they want. Give them the access to things they want. So we have the online campus. We have the YouTube channels. We have it so that we are trying very hard to say hi to them. So, you know, you obviously can invest in somebody puts something into the Google search. You can be the first one that pops up. You can do digital ads through TikTok, and you can do B-rolls on YouTube, and you can even have things on there. So your whole website can obviously be designed totally for first-time guests. I think it should be. And certainly the main splash pages. And so everything, and your app to make it easy to interact with and interface. Most churches are not even explored making their website interact well with an app. And most of them don't even have an app. And so, you know, what you're making it harder and harder and harder for your people to even invite, because the way they're going to invite is say, hey, check it out online. Or, hey, let me shoot you a text that has a link to this. Mm. And so you're really cutting off the invitational power of your own community, because, you know, we even found long before COVID that when our people would invite a friend, they wouldn't say, come to church with me this week. They would say, hey, you got to check it out online. Because they know intuitively that's what their friend, that's the most their friend would do. That's the most that they would do if they were in their shoes. Mm. So, I mean, this is everything. You know, one of my frustrations is that, like with Hybrid Church, to me, there's all kinds of ways of being hybrid, but that you have to be hybrid is just reality. It's the reality of living in a digital world. But how many people link all that with just COVID? You know, this was long before COVID. This started back in 2007. COVID just accelerated everything. And they almost feel like going hybrid was something you just had to do during COVID. And when COVID was over, let's get back to normal. Mm. Well, obviously, churches found out they didn't get back to normal. People didn't come back. That was also something that was in motion before that just got accelerated. And I just really wish people would I really pray for the ministry of that book, maybe more than any other book that I've written, because it's so much the future of the church, and there's so much almost emotional resistance for all the wrong reasons to what is the reality for the church, even if there had never been a pandemic.
One of the things that I love that you do, that you lay out in the book before you delve into some of your story and some of the pros of engaging online, is to be quite honest about the downsides of online. And there are significant downsides. Would you just highlight some of those? I think one of the things that I was really struck by was that you said it's making us angrier.
Yeah, I think all things social media has made it angrier, because you can voice things without accountability. You know, if you lived in a small town 100 years ago, and you had a disagreement with somebody, you had to work it out because you lived with each other and you were dependent on each other. He had to buy your eggs. You needed his cow to help with the barn. And, you know, it was a dependent society. That's all gone. So now I can be as angry and as nasty as I want to you on social media. And I'm absolutely, I get off scot-free. You can't even find me or know me or do anything. I can drop to my most base behavior. So I think that that's the social media thing that has made us coarser and angrier. And it also has made it easier to drop into ideological camps and to also have what Cass Sunstein called the daily me, which is every day I only expose myself to an echo chamber of what I believe and what I want to feel. And so I eliminate anything else. And so I only have all that reinforced. But, and I also feel like another critique is that not everything can be done digitally, nor should it be. That's why, you know, it's a hybrid model, not a digital model. Hybrid meaning both the physical and the digital coming together in a synergistic way to reach people the only way really they will be reached, and to grow the church in this world. And so it's deeply missiological. And so I think that there's a lot of things about the digital world that I think has been and will be greatly used by the evil one. But that doesn't mean it can't be used for good. And also doesn't mean we pull out of it, because then we're not being salt or light where that salt and light is most desperately needed.
Mm. How does AI play into the younger generation, into Gen Z and Gen Alpha? Because that's clearly a huge thing that didn't even exist, or was very much just in the making for millennials and the older generations.
Well, how it's playing out, again, is clear. It's exploding, and it's being readily embraced, even though there were several hesitations about AI, even in just a handful of years ago. Yet Elon Musk and many others saying this is the worst thing could ever happen. Mm-hmm. Stephen Hawking, before his death, said this is going to be the end of civilization. Really dangerous, because when it gets to the level of AI being able to take on generative intelligence, and where it really does become autonomous and independent and self-feeding, if you will, and some of the futuristic cataclysmic movies are no longer science fiction, you know, where you have it that happening, taking over. So what I think is the issue for AI that is of concern is the ethical framework of AI, because AI does not operate in an ethical wasteland. It has to make ethical decisions. Just take a self-driving car. Am I going to swerve away and not hit that pedestrian and save the driver's life? Or am I going to hit the pedestrian? You know, what am I going to do? And so there's ethical considerations in almost everything. And there was a study that just came out. I think I read it yesterday, actually, that found that increasingly people are extraordinarily comfortable with AI giving them advice and counsel in every area of life, including medicine. And simultaneous with that article was this other article that said we had to pull AI because it was recommending people to eat rocks for this particular problem. So, but what happens when we're going to AI for deeper life questions? You know, who am I, and does God exist? And I mean, we're going to be turning to AI more and more and more as our Google, and Google will be driven by AI, and already is in many ways. So you have these kinds of questions. So my concern is that we're going to have almost unlimited access to information, and almost no wisdom, no discernment, and no sense of the ethical framework that it should be informed by. Those are my concerns.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Jim, how would you respond to people who think that online church is not real church, who perhaps say that it's not church, it's watching TV?
I do think that if somebody views it that way, I think they it's kindly, I would say that is not an informed view. It obviously is not, and it's highly interactive, and I would say that throughout the church's history, we have actually been leaders of using technology for the sake of the cause of Christ, going all the way back to say something like Martin Luther and the posting of his 95 theses. The way that got out of Wittenberg was the printing press, and Gutenberg's invention, and even, you know, the incredible ministry more recently of Billy Graham and the use of television and radio and movies, film, greatly expanded that. And so, and what's really interesting is you go to a lot of these large churches that are in person, supposedly doing it embodied, and, you know, the only way that's right to do it. And all you have are these great big jumbo screens, and everybody's watching the guy who's live on stage on the screen. So it's a little disingenuous. I think that you know, the fact of the matter is that the church has got to embrace technology. It needs to embrace this digital revolution and use it for the cause of Christ when in appropriate and biblical ways. And you know, if you know, going online is simply going where most of the world lives. And if you care about the cause of Christ, you're going to do that.
I mean, you use a phrase in your book, TikTok spirituality. What is TikTok spirituality, and why should we as Christians be engaging with TikTok, do you think?
Well, because it's the way particularly younger generations communicate. It's where they get their news. It's where they get their information. It's where they're talking to each other. It's where they're learning about the world. I mean, here's what it'd be like saying. Let's say I were to say, here's this huge country on the planet, this nation, completely, you know, the gospel's not there. They're not Christian. And if somebody were to say, well, so why would we go there? That's where you need to take the gospel to an unreached people's group. TikTok's one great big unreached people's group. It's one great big generational unreached people's group. It's where that generation lives, eats, breathes, gets information, makes friends, forms opinions, is influenced and influences others. I mean, it's exactly where Jesus would be. It's exactly where we need to be. It is the new Mars Hill where we, you know, Hall is contending for the gospel. And so, you know, creating content and relationships on these platforms to a lost world is why I got up this morning. And so I think that it's just a given. It's just a given.
And what do you mean by YouTube, your evangelism?
Well, YouTube is the most influential platform, most used platform, more than TikTok. YouTube is everything. And it is the number one media, social media. So that is where most people, I mean, get news and information and entertainment and so on. And so if you're not constantly looking to how you can use this YouTube world and that format and that medium in a way that is appropriate for the sake of Christ, then I just think you're just abandoning the mission field. I think it would be, you know, ignorance at best and a callous heart toward the world at worst. And so we desperately need to do that. And so, and also another thing too about YouTube is to understand, it also tells you that what a visually driven world we are. It's visually driven. And in many ways, we've always been a visually driven people. You know, going back to the importance of stained glass in the Middle Ages, a lot of people feel like that was just fanciful. No, those were evangelistic tracts so that the pilgrims would actually get the gospel when they were illiterate and couldn't read. Well, people today are spiritually illiterate, and so we need to kind of YouTube the gospel, if you will, to bring it into a pictorial form so that it can help people. And people are open to that, and people will finally get it and finally listen or watch or pay attention. I mean, the success of The Chosen, for example, is a key example of going into those mediums and in a way bypassing the traditional barriers that they might have toward all things related to the Christian faith and really exposing them to what it is.
I guess a key thing about TikTok, YouTube, and say Instagram Reels is also how short it is. And I know one of the things that culture has done is massively shortened our attention spans as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it some studies show that our we'll give something about 8 seconds before we click, you know, and so you do need to kind of grab them quicker and then hopefully engage them, but then their whole attention span is less. And so even when our online campus and our talks, like, you know, I'm 25, 30 minutes max. And I don't care how gifted a speaker you might be, and there's many far more gifted than me, but people have a hard time going much beyond that. And if someone says, well, that's just not right, that's not the way it ought to be, they should, you know, be open to longer stuff, and you know, sermons should be longer and all that, I say, you know, it doesn't matter whether you agree with her or not. It's just the way it is. And I'd rather have 30 minutes of rapt attention than for somebody to look on there and see that the talk lasts 57 minutes and they don't even give it the first 8 seconds because they're not going to do that. So a lot of it is just a way of getting them to even try it and engage it. Because look, who, Ruth, I don't care what age you are. If you see something to click, and you see something to click that lasts 7 minutes or something that lasts 77 minutes, are you going to click a 77-minute thing unless it's high on your agenda? You're just not going to do it.
And you're probably going to listen on double speed anyway if it's 77 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
that's
you wouldn't
right.
take it in while
that's
you're
right.
doing something else.
Right.
I mean, one of the things you mentioned, the kind of the poverty of relationships, and I suppose online has completely dramatically changed the way that our society does relationships, our dating culture. I mean, what do you think are some of the key impacts of that? Because that's clearly had a huge impact on our culture, hasn't it?
Well, I think that we need to understand that community itself has changed, and the way that people interact begins and is often completely sustained through online interaction. And people say, well, that's not relationship. That's not community. I'm just telling you what it is. And if you talk to someone in, you know, Generation Z and say, look, you can't have authentic community online, they'll say, well, I'm sorry, but you can, and I do. And, you know, so it's just we need to be careful that we don't impose our definitions of things onto others, particularly when it's stylistic or preferential. Or as I would often tell my seminary students, don't build theological fences around your personal taste. Mm-hmm. So you may not want to do a relationship that way, but they might be very comfortable doing it. In fact, in other words, you could have two friends sitting next to each other at a Starbucks and they're having a conversation and they're actually just doing it all by texting each other and they're right there. It's just a comfort level. It's just a way of communicating language. So I think it has changed a lot of way that we interact. And I do think that it does, there are parts of it that make them hunger for the embodied. But again, what's really, really interesting is that they might have an interest in the embodied, but they're also intimidated by it. They don't know how to do it very well. They want to stair step into it digitally. And it's just a real comfort level to do community in a digital way, right or wrong. It's a comfort level.
I suppose we've also seen a decline in marriages. I mean, what does the future look like if there are, statistically speaking, less couples, less nuclear families?
Well, there is a decline in marriage right now and a decline in birth rates. The reasons for that largely are just that people just don't view marriage as essential, view marriage as something that they aspire to. And so there's just less of it. And they're not living together. There's actually, that's not increasing. It's not a substitute. It's just marriage is not something that they have a vision for or that they should be a part of. And children, there's all kinds of reasons why the birth rate's going down. One is you are more inclined to have children if you are in the context of a committed relationship, such as marriage. Not many people intentionally want to have a child as a single parent as much as when there's two. That part is still there. But you also have a lot of people not wanting to bring children into this world because it's so messed up, they would say. You also have economic things driving it. Children are very expensive, and a lot of people don't want to strap on that expense. There's a lot of reasons why they don't want to do it. But again, because they don't view children as something that is an expectation on their life. They don't view children, and maybe they didn't have a happy childhood themselves, and so they don't have a desire, or a vision for that. So there's a lot of reasons going into that. But yes, you do have a decline in marriage right now and a decline in birth rates.
I suppose with all of that being said, and in light of what you said about the pornification of society, are there any tips that you would give about how we do date safely online if you are that way inclined?
It's interesting. I just read something that online dating is starting to really lose its appeal. And there's a return to wanting to do it differently. I think that again, what the church can do is to be a place that is safe for singles to come, and it's not just a meat market, but it's safe and it is a community through which you can meet people the way you used to meet people. I think the dating apps really just came about because there was such a loss of community, what Putnam called bowling alone, that swept our culture. It was like, how can I meet people? It's either this or a singles bar. I need something. And the technology was there and it was novel. But then I think people began to get a bad taste in their mouth because it didn't always turn out very well. And so there was a desire now to go back and be more embodied and organic about it. So I guess I'm answering your question is that I'm seeing an increasing number of people we're charting this culturally that are saying there's really not a good way to do it online. I'm leaving it.
You've written a whole book about this, and I would highly recommend people read Hybrid Church. But if you could whittle down some top tips for people engaging online, what would you say?
I do think you need to take the medium seriously, like YouTube. I think you need to put your efforts into an online presence. Most people are online, but they don't have an online presence. And so I would take very seriously trying to create that. Understand that that's where you're going to be making your initial contacts and building trust. And so are you communicating and is your presence online something that is going to create a sense of trust between you and the people you're trying to reach? And then I would strongly encourage a full online campus, just a place where people can come and attend and engage that way. I'm not saying it replaced the in-person. I'm saying you've got to have it alongside. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff, but those are just, you asked me for a couple, three quick ones. So,
James, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk. or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.